and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 20. Our guest today is Christopher Hoff, the Technical Director of the Cloud Security Alliance. Welcome, Christopher.
Thank you.
And you told me to call you Hoff, so I'm going to do that during the show. So
thanks so much.
Hopefully that's okay. Yep. My name is Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show, and we'll jump right into the industry news. Certainly one of the biggest announcements this past week was HP buying 3Com, and a ton of activity and guesses about the motivation and the rationale there. One of the things that I asked myself is, was this really a data center play, or was this a move to global distribution in China, given all of the activity 3Com has done with Huawei there? There was speculation about whether HP would buy Brocade or not. Chris, you know, any thoughts here, opinions on the acquisition?
Well, I think given who I work for as my day job, I have lots of opinions, but I think, and that's Cisco, by the way. So I think it's interesting, ultimately, when you look at the dynamics of a lot of the convergence going on in the market space, rounding out portfolios and essentially buttressing those offerings with both services and technology to kind of fill gaps. I think how you summarized it is valid in both perspectives, both the data center play and a move to global distribution. I think China is certainly an amazingly ripe market for a lot of vendors in this space. So I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah, I tend to think it's a little bit more on the global distribution side, only in that, you know, I keep asking, you know, where do you go if you need a core switch for, you know, Ethernet and 10 gig Ethernet in the data center? And you go to Cisco, and you go to Foundry, and then, you know, the list, you know, gets slimmer quickly. So I think that really the breadth of the 3Com services or the joint venture with Huawei on the services side, it's much more akin in my mind to HP buying some of the consulting firms than necessarily pure technology portfolio. Although they tend to be talking about the technology at 3Com, which I guess maybe since you know, the last few years just hasn't been marketed as well enough as it should have been. So, but we'll see.
Yep.
Elsewhere in the news, a couple of things from Google this week. First was the Go language, which, of course, I think is the absolutely right name for them to pick, given my initials. they describe it as, you know, what was interesting, they describe it as an experimental language. So I think, as opposed to some of their big announcements, you know, something like the, you know, the Chrome OS, where they position that as an inevitable, this they positioned a little bit as experimental language between the performance of C and the dynamism of a language like Python. And one of the interesting things, I think, is that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Google, you know, their implementation of MapReduce is based on C. And, you know, does that give them a performance advantage, for example, and this is a hot debate, don't want to open the whole thing, but between, for example, Hadoop, which is based on Java. You know, there's certainly a lot of personal preferences here, developer preferences. I don't think there's any right answer. Chris, did you follow the Go announcement and see anything interesting there?
Well, I am enjoying the back and forth on the battle that is going on and brewing, kind of in the, between the purists of both language branches here, both C and Python. I'm wondering how it's going to fit in into the long term with development of their services portfolio, and the notion of experimental and Google kind of go hand in hand for me. I don't divorce those two words very much. And
right.
So some things, I, you know, is this a kind of just another interesting science project, or is there something deeper here that we're going to see in terms of the broadening of service plays and integration with some of the other acquisitions they've made lately? It's so hard because their interests are so diverse, and they all tend to kind of converge in very interesting and sometimes orthogonal ways. So I'm not an apps guy, although I've started to kind of get into having a lot of fun with Ruby on Rails and such, and understanding the intersections there with cloud and programmatic architectures and development. But I'm probably not the guy to go to as it relates to understanding you know, what this really means as we move forward, especially.
You know, I was at the Velocity conference last summer, and there Google was releasing a whole bunch of tools and utilities to help people optimize the web page performance. And I think the way Google, just given their size and scale and that they dominate the advertising market around the web and search, for them, any time the ecosystem as a whole gets a little more efficient, they benefit by more clicks and more ads. And, you know, so to me, it seems like there's probably a whole slew of things that they're going to do to try to raise the whole tide, since they are, just by their very position, the benefactor of the rising tide.
It makes sense. I mean, yeah, exactly. I think that ultimately, as it knits together as an entire kind of set of portfolio elements, I think you're probably spot on in terms of what it's going to deliver over time. A better user experience when you start to fold more and more eggs into the basket that is Google.
Yeah, and then something that got, drowned out a little bit in that Go noise was just a repricing of online storage.
Right.
Google is now offering 20 gigabytes for $5 a year. To me, the next step is they're going to start paying me to use their storage. I mean, we
Well,
can't be that
yeah,
far away from that.
right, and in many cases, indexing what you put in that in those storage buckets, and you kind of everyone just clicks over terms of service on things, right? So you say, yeah, here's this contract you have to accept for your free service, or they'll pay you to search it. But you know, it'll be interesting to see how the secondary reuse of data and the types of data that people store here, will be affected, and ultimately will affect these pricing tiers. I think it's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I
Well,
think there's a much bigger story here about what is the f is there a floor for
Right.
online storage pricing, and does it become such a competitive advantage and weapon that companies who have the ability to price down like Google will turn it into something? I almost look at it in the same way, in the way that Dell used their inventory efficiency to just take so much cost out of the equation to get to rock bottom prices, and fought that price war with. I think it was with Compaq back when Compaq was independent, or maybe with HP, and just use that to wipe them out.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, lots of stuff on the Windows side this last week. So Amazon made some announcements about AWS and the Windows development kit that they're making available. Rackspace also put their hat in the ring. I don't think their service is fully available, but the beta Windows product isn't. And of course, all of this culminating around the Microsoft Azure efforts and all that. I think Windows is the sort of dark horse here that is going to take us by surprise in 2010. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, so I tend to agree with you, Gary. I think I wrote a series of posts, not the least of which kind of culminated in some thoughts yesterday. We see pure infrastructure as a service players crawling up stack to platform as a service, right? And so whether this is the integration of database offerings as a service, as a platform, and then the incremental addition of programmatic interfaces like .NET, like the emergence of niche players who may serve Ruby like Heroku or an Engine Yard, I think a lot of these players are certainly crawling up stack, and as they do that, one of the reasons they're doing that in many cases is figuring how they take or at least equalize the capabilities of what you could do internally in an enterprise and the frameworks that you use internally to allow you and give you the permission to and the comfort with moving some of those enterprise development and applications out of your private clouds and into public cloud capabilities. So Microsoft.NET makes an awful lot of sense in the spaces where you're trying to be able to get parity and application portability. And I think we're going to see that in AWS and a lot of different players. So I totally agree with you.
I think it's the first step to really get everybody bought in. I do believe personally that we won't recognize a lot of the advantages of moving things to the cloud or cloud type of architectures until people are able to take a, I don't want to say a wholesale look, fresh look, but at least a partial fresh look at redesigning some applications. But this is a marathon, and certainly getting the stack parity, as you say, is the first step.
I agree. And it's also opening, the window for folks that are maybe we call them service brokers, but the reality of companies that are starting to sprout up that will, in lieu of consistency and standards, offer to take your legacy applications that can be written in all sorts of different things and move them to the cloud in the most convenient way possible. So that's
Right.
another element there.
Right. So let me ask you one final question that just came to my mind here on that. Do you think that the parity playing field is likely to be more the operating system environment or the virtual machine environment?
Ah, that is a very interesting question, and maybe C, none of the above. I wrote a post that was titled something on the order of "Virtual machines are not the solution; they're part of the problem." I think ultimately, alluding back to the statement I made before about the development and ultimately kind of the rise to provenance of of platform as a service, I think we're going to see the concept of, you know, Geos, just enough OS, where the platform as a service eliminates a lot of the bloat, licensing costs, and complexity associated with moving applications around. I mean, that's certainly my hope. My hope is that ultimately, while today we are focused as an extension, let's say, of virtualization in the private data center and private clouds, to being able to move these containers, which unfortunately, you know, the bulk of them, probably 80 or 90% of the mass, if you will, of this atomic unit, is the operating system that supports this stuff rather than the app itself. You know, I ultimately think that we are focusing in, and the industry and developers are starting to realize that, you know, that stuff is there's an awful tax we pay there, and maybe what we ought to be focused on is making these environments easier to move the applications and content rather than worrying about the operating systems themselves.
Great. Well, let's dive into the guest Q&A with Christopher Hoff, and I'm going to call you Hoff,
Thank you.
Technical Director of the Cloud Security Alliance. Let's first, if you would, Hoff, maybe just spend a minute introducing yourself and your background as it relates to the Cloud Security Alliance, so our listeners can get a sense of your experience.
Sure. I have a what I consider an interesting background. It may not be interesting to other people, but I've had the collective joys of being both a service provider at a large global scale and designing managed services and you know, globally orchestrated and operated. I've done the startup route many a time. I've been the CISO of a $25 billion financial services company. I'm, you know, clearly a consumer. So I have what to me is an interesting set of perspectives on emerging technologies, not the least of which, when I focus on security and apply those experiences collectively over time, I find myself thinking differently than a lot of people, which is either good or bad, depending upon what I'm thinking about.
Sure.
So my focus has been over the last four, probably 5 years, on talking about virtualization, security, and ultimately, before I knew to call it cloud, you know, we talked about utility computing and distributed computing, things like that. I was focused on the security elements of a lot of this disruptive innovation from a technology perspective and what it means to security, and vice versa. So,
Great.
and then ultimately that's how I got involved with the Cloud Security Alliance.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about how that group got started and your involvement.
Well, Jim Rivas and Niels Pullman, who are two of the kind of prime instigators behind getting it organized. I've known Jim for quite some time, and we met at eBay's Red Team event, which is where they bought a bunch of really interesting industry pundits, security researchers, et cetera, together to discuss all sorts of really neat things about the emergence of service on the internet and ultimately what was becoming cloud-based services. And Jim and I kind of hooked up and we were discussing the need to, as we did with virtualization, I gave a series of presentations that had such heartwarming titles as the Four Horsemen of the Virtualization Security Apocalypse. just kind of reminding folks that, look, there are huge amounts of challenges that we can't remember, that we can't forget to pay attention to, even when the shiny new things show up. I saw that behavior occur, as it does at every inflection point with virtualization, and then with kind of reading the tea leaves at the bottom of the cup as cloud started to be called cloud, realized the same thing was happening there. So I started drawing attention to cloud security before about 2 years ago, before it really started getting frothy and interesting. And Jim reached out and said, hey, you know, we should really organize something. And so I said, absolutely. And we need to take into consideration a lot of different perspectives, not just a bunch of navel-gazing vendors or pundits. And so that's how the conversation started.
Right. Now, cloud security is obviously a huge topic and means many different things to many different people, different constituents. How do you, or how does the Cloud Security Alliance break it down into some areas of focus, whether that's by, you know, technology or segment or other?
Yeah, so the CSA is made up of, it's an all-volunteer organization that is underwritten and sponsored by vendors who see the potential for both making their products and services better, as well as consumers and consultants, and even some standards bodies have joined and are involved. And so there's about 4,100 different people that participate now. And what we wanted to do was really get our arms around the the way in which security is impacted and impacts cloud. So we separated, there are 15 domains of concern, as we call it. And we launched a white paper at RSA last year, and the version 2 of that paper is coming out shortly, probably in the next couple of weeks. And we separate it really into this triumvirate. There's the overall cloud architecture. So we want to be able to allow folks to understand what cloud means from a kind of a security lens. Then there's operating the cloud and governing the cloud. So those three categories then yield all these different domains of concern and areas of focus, everywhere from BCP disaster recovery to forensics to traditional operations, pretty much very, very similarly aligned to, let's say, one of the ISO standards in terms of security program management that you might think about in terms of how you would deal with moving to any operational paradigm and securing it. So we split it out in those domains and make it hopefully easy to read and easy to understand the problem scope, and then try to give you some guidance and solutions on how you can approach it.
Got it. So let me ask the loaded question, which of course has been a topic in ever since cloud computing became such a mainstream media item. Is the security component the biggest stumbling block to widespread adoption from your perspective?
When I speak to customers and when I speak to people that are interested in thinking about consuming cloud services, there are really two perspectives that one has to recognize to truly answer that question. There is a technical and provider's perspective on cloud, which is very empirical, very models-based. We try to essentially apply a set of rules and semantics to define what is or what isn't cloud. And security in that particular case becomes a huge piece, as does compliance and risk management. As you try to take what we do today, clinically chop it up and figure out how cloud impacts security and vice versa. But then there's the consumer's view. And the consumer's view is really, it affects the providers in the same way because they go home at night, right? So there's kind of a consumerized view of this, which is anything that uses the internet, that interacts with, touches, stores, processes my data, whether it's on a PC, a Mac, or a handheld mobile platform, is also cloud. So everything is cloud at this point.
Right.
So to be honest with you, on the one hand, when you are, let's say, a corporation, and you are looking at how cloud and the move to certain, and there's lots of different cloud models, right, how that impacts your security, your compliance, then sure, I would say that security is one of, if not the biggest stumbling block to more cloud adoption. There are also other issues like lock-in and portability, et cetera. But on the corporate technician's clinical view, yes. On the corporate side, man, I would run out of fingers and toes to count the number of quote unquote cloud services that I personally use on a daily basis.
Sure.
Danger, Sidekick, Xbox Live, MobileMe, iTunes. These things are all in the perspective of how a consumer might define it, cloud, and that doesn't stop people at all. Even when there's failures, they get upset. But at the same point in time, it's become such an ingrained part of what we do and function without necessarily understanding the semantics of it that it's not that big of a barrier to adoption. So
yeah,
it's very important, right, to distinguish.
Yeah, I think on the consumer side, it's so easy for people to see the value. And of course, on the consumer side, you're dealing with a decision maker of one.
Right.
On the corporate side, unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way.
Right. No, it doesn't.
Now, knowing your industry expertise, you mentioned a few things aside from security, but what are the things that you think the industry as a whole has to help get the classic conservative enterprise, over, or get them? What hurdles do they have to get across? Even if it might just be perceived hurdles, what are the other things besides cloud security that you think come up?
Well, certainly the goat rodeo of the definitional nuances of pointing fingers at things and calling them cloud or not cloud. There was a point to that. Vendors and providers like to and are used to having to chop up things into addressable markets and sort things into buckets to give customers the permission to buy those services. But what that's done with the confusion of the kind of the duality of these perspectives has really confused people, because every time there is now a failure, whether it's a security failure or not, a failure of service, availability, whatever it may be, I blame the cloud.
Right.
And so the perspective here is to focus less now that we have some consistency and definition on what is the cloud, and focus more on how can I use it? How can I ultimately paint a picture that a company understands within the life cycle of how they deploy applications in general, how they function, how they operate, how they can move things and prioritize which things will move to one or more types of clouds, whether, how the intersection of public and private and virtual private and hybrid clouds will evolve, and then how they could ultimately plan and allocate budget and manpower to that process. So instead of painting it as the shiny whiz-bang new paradigm shift that, all those great buzzwords we throw at it, let's look at it as a very important and prominent way of introducing better efficiency, flexibility, agility, and cost savings, like we have with every iteration of how we've changed the way in which we consume and operate our computing experience, and start focusing again on the real benefits here to the business.
I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, in the midst, I think it was around the time when the CNN video came out with, when everyone started clamoring about cloud definitions, I said, there's got to be a way to like r rise up here. And I said, well, I came across the and registered the domain the Practical Cloud. I haven't
That's
figured
not
out what to
bad.
do with it yet, but to me that epitomizes where, as you said, the next chapter is like, how do we make use of this and move things forward?
That's right. Yeah, that's a great domain. I'm sure you'll sell it for millions, and I'll never hear from you
If
again.
anybody wants the Practical Cloud or has some ideas to include me as a partner for putting real use case real world case studies up there, let me know at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com.
Well, you know what? I mean, you compare that with Judith Hurwitz's latest release of Cloud Computing for Dummies, and you've got practical dummies and their adoption of cloud. It's a it's a win-win.
Goodness. Okay, so let's take the consumer element out of the equation
Sure.
temporarily here. Do you think that there are more security issues to be wrestled down in enterprise to cloud or cloud to cloud? Or if so, even if you can't pick one or the other, I'm just curious to get your take on what has to happen in those two scenarios.
That's a great question. I think ultimately it's cloud to cloud is the real set of challenges, because what you need for cloud to cloud portability and or interoperability is a common set of standards, frameworks for describing the mitigating controls, the requirements for protection, for confidentiality, integrity, and availability across a standardized set of interfaces, even though you could be dealing with heterogeneous cloud operations. And that is, I think, that's a long-term play. I think ultimately enterprises today have been able to, at least the larger ones, that are able to kind of step back and go, hang on a second. All right, the fog has lifted. I understand what this is. It's a, you know, it's a way, cloud makes sense to me. It's practical, pragmatic. I understand there are certain things that today cloud computing and the providers are ready for me to move to cloud, and other things that aren't. And so those things that aren't simply stay inside the walled gardens for a while, and/or they get transitioned to private cloud, so that the way in which the evolving sets of technology allow us to get better about describing, identifying, and protecting that data in preparing for the fact that it is actually going to move outside of our control, our direct operational control, will be where larger companies invest. This doesn't really apply so much to SMBs, but to large enterprises that have sunk costs in understanding large security programs. So I think the bigger challenges are, as a forcing function, cloud computing is fantastic because it is making people realize that there's a difference between trust and control. Control is, cloud is all about giving up the graceful relinquishing of control. You are giving somebody else's your apps and data, and you're hoping that they either contractually do what they're supposed to do, but ultimately what you want to be able to do is to assert how workloads, applications, and data ought to be treated, and then have ways of leveraging that automation, scale, dynamism, and self-service to ensure that once you place it in their control, you can trust to the fact that they will be, that those things will be respected and be given the transparency and visibility to ensure that that is in fact the case. So I think enterprise to cloud is the bigger challenge, because it will set the stage for how people are going to demand for transparency and description of how things ought to be protected, which will then yield better ways and standardized ways of allowing for cloud-to-cloud portability workloads. So, that's a
Yeah,
great
that makes a
question.
lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. So tell us, for some folks who are interested in a little bit of the nitty-gritty, and since you are the technical director, about a couple of the things, maybe whether it's, protocol related, access controls, IPv6, encryption, some of the things that the Cloud Security Alliance has its fingers in these days.
there's the never-ending list of things. When we talk about the those three sections, cloud architecture, governing the cloud, and operating the cloud, we see an awful lot of it's kind of like that Weezer song, the pull on the thread on your sweater, and everything starts to unravel. You can't go down one of these paths without intersecting the other. So we are spending an awful lot of time, especially in large corporations, as they kind of read the documents and then say, hey, how do I, what are the key elements I really ought to focus on? And strangely enough, what they realize at the end of the day is it's all 15 domains. It's very unusual to see somebody say, well, unless they're a service provider, which they're focusing on delivering one particular service. I mean, it's everything from virtualization to storage, identity access management, encryption and key management, application security, incident response, operations, BCP, and those are the operational elements. And I think, quite honestly, people have more trouble understanding how they take what they already have and what they're used to doing, and maybe they do that internally today. So the operational elements, the things I just read off, those domains are the most troublesome, because in many cases, what you'll find is that cloud providers, big or small, simply given the abstraction of some of these functions that these solutions today depend on, your ability to plumb things into a network in a certain way, the way to be able to integrate these things and have them interoperate and communicate, simply don't exist. And so they're challenged, scratching their head, saying, wait a second, how do I deal with federated or not, how do I deal with integrating my identity access management solutions when I move a set of applications or services to the cloud that are dependent upon service domains in my Active Directory network? How does that play? Or how do I do incident response and notification when I don't have direct access to the logs anymore? Or how do I deal with key management? So the operational portion are really the thing that people have trouble with, because that's the stuff they're letting go of. The governance portions are governance and enterprise risk management, legal, e-discovery, compliance and audit, portability and interoperability, information lifecycle management, really are only solved when the providers give us more transparency and expose more capabilities to provide that visibility back. So, you're kind of at the mercy of trusting in making that decision again about which apps you feel comfortable with in that balance of operations and governance to be able to move to a third-party provider. We have to deal with that with outsourcing too, so it should be nothing new in that regard, but fingers are everywhere.
So the average person who's a systems architect isn't necessarily going to want to go through that list of things that you outlined every time they need to consider whether they're going to place an application in one cloud or another. Is compliance and security compliance and maybe other types of compliance, is that going to be the new metric for defining one cloud provider over another? And who fills that role? Is that something that the CSA participates in? Is it a new third party? Is it the providers themselves?
Well, I'm going to have to go and get some Kleenex and start crying, because yeah, so security does not equal compliance and vice versa, right? I'm not going to invite a religious debate on your program being in there for the first time. So I'll just say that compliance is the floor, not the ceiling. It is unfortunate that we have become much more compliance driven, across the board for the most part, as opposed to governance and risk management driven. Strangely enough, there's an industry term that groups all three of them together, and GRC, governance, risk management, compliance. The reality is, I think the answer to your question is yes. In certain regards, you are going to see people rush to being able to suggest as a provider that they are, you sprinkle the magic pixie dust on your apps and data, you put it in our cloud, and you are magically compliant. Pick an example, it doesn't really matter. There are certainly going to be specialization verticals addressing that, with the audit businesses to go along with it, by the way. And the, you see it in everything from SAS 70 Type 2 certifications to PCI, HIPAA, et cetera.
Right.
And then, so yeah, we're going to see it. I think we're going to, for those industries that are heavily regulated, it is absolutely going to be a compliance game for quite some time, until at which point we can gain a lot of this visibility and transparency back to where we're able to audit things on our own terms, and be able to make decisions about how our data is consumed, by whom, and where.
Yeah, I think that's the secret, is we need to get away from having, again, third parties who sort of provide this oversight, so to speak, to allowing users of cloud computing services, providing them the tools so they can make quick and easily informed decisions.
I am finding myself very much in sync with everything you're saying.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
but this whole idea of somebody else scouring the landscape and telling me who's compliant with X, Y, and Z over the other, to me, is nothing but a bunch of people who are going to make a lot of money in the midst of all this confusion with, I don't want to discount the value there, but I think the value would be better spent developing some tools to allow customers to run through the checklist themselves.
Gary, that sort of thing never happens in this industry. I
It
don't know
doesn't,
what
it,
you're.
we can, we, but we can still be wishful thinkers.
Oh, I meant the part about people investing in the quote unquote security market to make money.
Oh, okay, right.
I'm just horrified that you would suggest that.
Right.
actually, kind of on a orthogonal point here. So I'm just this week, in fact, once I get off the call with you, I'll be pushing the go button. I've been working on something that the CSA will be involved with, as well as a lot of other players that that I think people will be surprised by, on something I call the ASICS API. And really, ASICS is an idea that I kind of had. It's a way of providing a standard set of RESTful expressions that can be built into software platform infrastructure as a service cloud offerings, that the ASICS, and sort of audit assertion assessment and assurance API. And it's really, the thought process here is to do two things. For providers, they're getting crushed with right to audit clauses in their contracts that say, from customers say, great, I'd like to audit you, and I'd like to do it now,
Right.
even at cost. And the manual processes involved with some of these things without a standard set of audit practices of being able to classify that across cloud providers is very difficult and very expensive. So on the provider side, it automates the capability to expose certain functions in a secure way to allow people to interrogate these stacks in certain regards where both parties are comfortable to do that in a real-time basis, not once every quarter or a year. Secondarily, it allows authorized consumers of those services to schedule and use a common set of standard methodologies and tool sets to interface with these stacks and perhaps do things they can't do today, like run network-based vulnerability scans in ways that they don't upset the general operation in multi-tenant environments, but allow you to use the same set of capabilities you do in your enterprise, but with cloud providers. And so that's the notion of ASICS. And there's a whole bunch of side work being done here to get large scale endorsement and involvement, which is coming together pretty well with a lot of people kind of aiming at the same target. So
Great. I mean, so it sounds like that's really the first step of enablement to allow people to have this discussion directly, meaning the consumer of the cloud service and the provider of the cloud service.
Otherwise, I mean, it just comes down to paying other people money to give you information feedback that is so temporally out of date at the moment it is given to you that it's useless. I mean, that's why we
Yeah,
have.
and that was my, you're right, that was the point I was saying earlier, is I, you know, we should take collectively as a community, we should take those dollars and invest them in trying to do something akin to this ASICS API.
Amen. I agree.
I didn't even know about that ASICS API before you got
Yeah,
on the phone.
I haven't really. I've done a poor job of advertising it publicly, but I'm going to be. This week was my target to really start getting it out there. And I think you'll be impressed slash surprised by some of the people that have signed on saying they're going to participate in this.
Great. For those folks who might not be active with the Cloud Security Alliance that should be, are there any words of things you'd like to share with people about the benefits for either consumers of cloud services or providers or technology vendors?
Yeah, I would briefly. First of all, go to www.cloudsecurityalliance.org. We've done. We're trying to do a better job of funneling those volunteer efforts for participating in a more constructive and real-time ways to allow people to feel that they can sign up for things that they're best suited to contribute to. So we're trying to, we're a volunteer organization, so we're trying to do a better job. But like I said, there's 4,100 people that have signed up already. So the benefits are pretty clear. You get to interact with literally both groundswell enthusiasts, participants, consumers, and then like, CSOs, CTOs, and CIOs from some enormous companies, both cloud providers and non-cloud providers. It's pretty amazing to be exposed and to establish relationships with folks that are literally and quite potentially offering you and providing you the services that your businesses rely on. And
Right.
it's a venue that, again, is because it's volunteer, is not vendor biased. We get all sorts of perspectives when people contribute to these things, and it's a great set of debates that go into generating these documents in ways that are, I think, practically useful. I my part of my day job, I've gone into these large accounts to sit down to talk about one thing, and I say, well, what do you want to focus on for this session? They take out literally a stack of paper, slap it down on the desk, and it's a CSA guidance. Which is just fantastic.
Yeah.
That sometimes they don't even know that I, on that first draft, that what I do for that organization, the fact that I wrote the entire first chapter, and so it's amazing to see how this document has proliferated and is really useful to people. And so hopefully the V2 version 2 of the doc does an even better job.
Great. Well, we'll save that for the next time we get a chance to chat with each other on the show.
That'll be great.
At this point, I'd like to jump into the final section of the show. We call it Cloud Tips, where we pick an interesting consumer or business-facing cloud app or utility that we use. I'm going to go first off. My pick is HelpStream, HelpStream. And what it is a very simple, out-of-the-box cloud service to build a customer support site. And they include a lot of social-type features where you can rate people based on the contributions or the comments that they make. And so there's a little a video game aspect to it to keep people engaged. But they've got a free service which is really ready to go. Sign up, you're off and running, and then of course you can pay if you want to have something that's branded or co-branded or much more engaged. We just started using it about a week ago. I've also used it as a user of some other interesting cloud services, and so far pretty neat. So that's my recommendation, HelpStream. Hoff, how about you?
Pretty cool. Well, actually, I am. I've been intrigued with this company and met with the founders of it. They've recently come out of stealth, and it kind of goes along the line with that question you asked about the challenges of moving to the cloud. And so, the company that I would like to bring up, which I found just interesting, is CloudSwitch. Have you heard of them, Gary?
I have not.
Okay, so CloudSwitch, they brand themselves kind of the enterprise gateway to the cloud, is a company that lets you move and migrate existing applications that you may have, legacy or not, however you want to classify them, to the cloud without having to re-architect the app or change the management tools and policies. So, very interesting set of capabilities that I'm sure are going to intrigue folks as they think about how do I get this app in its entirety with its supporting infrastructure without having to re-architect it to the cloud in ways that satisfy my service levels and availability requirements. So it's cloudswitch.com, and take a look. It's pretty interesting as far as I can tell.
We'll put that in the show notes. Sounds like they might be a good candidate to come on the show at some point.
I think that might not be a bad idea.
Excellent. Well, Hoff, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a busy schedule. We really appreciate the time. Any place you would like us to point people to for the CSA, yourself, blogs, Twitter streams, etc.?
Yeah, I'll make it really quick. So the Cloud Security Alliance is www.cloudsecurityalliance.org. My blog is www.rationalsurvivability.com/blog. You could just Google Chris Hoff and it comes up. And then if you if you'd like to denial of service your Twitter stream timeline, you could follow me at Beaker. And I would just caution you that you might be deluged by a bunch of what I consider interesting things, but I encourage people to follow me and then quickly unfollow me if it becomes overwhelming.
Well, I will put in a color commentary there that you have a beyond human talent to maintain that information outpouring on Twitter. I commend it. I don't know how you do it, but There must be some special magic that you've got going there, because it really is incredible.
It's all that Ruby code. It's actually not me. It's just it's Autobots. And my wife, who is standing over here, yelled at me this morning about, get off that damn Twitter. It would probably agree with you, much to her chagrin.
Yeah, great. Well, definitely check out Hoff at all those places. He's got a lot of interesting things to say. We really appreciate the time. Thanks again, Hoff, for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
And thanks very much to our listeners. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. And for sure, you can subscribe on iTunes by just searching for The Cloud Computing Show in the iTunes search, and the show usually comes up right there. If you do have any comments to add about the show, feel free to add a comment in the iTunes section as well. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.